And without further ado, Jack Lesenberry.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. The real Jack Lesenberry is much younger and better looking. I just got to play him tonight because I have a face made for radio. This isn't a very important topic. It may be the most important issue that's faced Michigan this year. And we have some very distinguished guests, people who are part of this story, with us tonight. I'm going to introduce them all briefly, and then I'm going to ask all of them to sort of start by telling us something that I'll ask them. We may have a little dialogue, and then we'll turn to your questions. The only request I have is that, A, we keep it civil, and B, we keep the focus tonight on the Flint water crisis, not on anything else. Anyway, so first of all, on my far right, not necessarily politically, State Senator Jim Ananick, who represents Flint, Genesee County, in the Michigan legislature, who's been very interested in this from the get-go and has helped me in my understanding of it. Professor Mark Edwards from Virginia Tech, whose research established definitively that what the state was telling us about lead was not true. And I want to pause to recognize someone in the audience who is a hero of mine, Kurt Guyette, if you could stand up, sir. Kurt. Kurt is an investigative reporter I've known for 20 years or something with formerly the Metro Times, and now his main job is with the American Civil Liberties Union. And it was his dogged reporting and the fact that he discovered this document from the Environmental Protection Agency that cast considerable doubt on the state's claims that enabled him and Dr. Edwards to get a grant. We may hear more about that and actually do the research. Next is Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha. I hope I pronounced your name correctly. From the show, correct me. Pediatric residency program of Hurley Medical Center, who hopefully can tell us exactly how severe a medical problem it is. We laymen throw things around. She really understands this in a way that very few people do. And on my right, Steve Carmody, immediate right, who has been covering the story very ably and adeptly for Michigan Radio for all these weeks and I guess months now. I'd like to start by asking Steve just to sort of give us a brief overview of what happened, where we are, and where we are now.
Well, I guess it all starts the basic part of it on April of 2014, when the city threw the switch, cutting off water from the city of Detroit and putting the city entirely on the Flint River for its drinking water, and then 18 months later, getting back to Detroit water after all the problems that resulted from that switch, the problems that began with discolored water, bad tasting water, proceeded into E. coli outbreaks, then problems with people suffering burns and losing hair because of all the chlorine that was put in to kill the E. coli, then the jump in TTHM levels, the total trihalomethanes, the city, it took a year to flush that out of the system or get it down to reasonable levels, and then, of course, the final capstone on it, the increased lead levels created by the corrosiveness of the water. So that 18-month period has brought us to where we are now.
Great. Now, Mark Edwards, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how the study that you did came to be and what you did and how you established the true nature of what was going on with the water. And just to remind you briefly, we're all mostly laymen and journalists. Those are people who couldn't pass organic chemistry. And to remember that.
Well, so for me, this story actually started when a Flint resident, Leanne Walters, called me and mentioned that her child had been lead poisoned from the water. And there was no other lead source in her home. And I do a lot of work with lead poisoned children around the country. I have for the last 10 years. And she also mentioned that an EPA employee had been helping her, Miguel del Toro, to work on her problem and that he recommended that she call me. So early one morning in April, I remember talking her through a sample collection on the phone. She shipped us the samples at our lab, and when we analyzed them that day, I was just really almost stunned, and we just were in disbelief at how high the lead levels were. Hazardous waste levels of lead were coming out of her tap, 2.5 times hazardous waste levels of lead. So after we got over that shock and re-ran the samples because we didn't believe it, we called her and said, you have a very serious problem. And at that point, Mr. Del Toro, Miguel, wrote a memo that in very clear terms laid out the nature of the problem that Flint and Flint's children were facing, which was there was no corrosion control installed. The water was very corrosive, and in fact, Flint was breaking federal laws, and he mentioned the specific statutes that were being broken. So that was when I first got involved.
So what did you do when you realized, what was the sequence of steps when you realized the lead was in the water?
Well, we told Ms. Walters, and EPA found out about it, and the memo was written, and at that point, we just assumed the authorities would do the right thing and step in to make sure Flint followed the law.
What month and year was that, sir?
That was, sampling was in April, and the memo came out in June.
This June?
Yes.
Now, can you account for the fact that the state of Michigan's test results were radically different? In fact, I believe the spokesman for the Department of Environmental Quality told Steve, don't worry about it, don't sweat about it, or whatever it was?
Well, they were radically different for two reasons that were pointed out in Mr. Del Toro's memo. The first was they use a procedure designed to miss lead in water when it's present. It's called a pre-flush or a pre-cleaning step. And we've been trying to get that banned nationally since 2006 without success. But as Mr. Del Toro pointed out in his memo, the state was using this procedure to pre-clean the pipes so that when residents took the sample the next day, they would tend to find lower lead. They also were not sampling in the highest risk homes as they are supposed to. And how many people have used the sampling kit that the state has? Did you notice the very small opening on the top of the bottle? I see you nodding your head. So there's this opening on the top of the bottle that's about the size of a nickel. And in order to get the water in the bottle, you have to allow it to flow from the tap at just a trickle of a flow rate, not a normal flow rate. This is another step that misses lead in water. The higher flow rates get more lead into the bottle, as you would normally when you collect water for cooking or drinking. So all of these steps were just missing the lead problem. And when we used the normal EPA protocol without extra steps, we found very high lead.
Now, Dr. Hannah Atisha, could you talk a little bit about what the danger of lead really is? Who is most affected? And once somebody has this in their body, is there an antidote?
Thanks, Jack. So lead is probably one of the most potent neurotoxins known to mankind. So once it reaches your body, there is no treatment. It's irreversible, lifelong, multi-generational impacts. So both the CDC, the American Academy of Pediatrics, advocates for primary prevention. Lead should never reach the body of a child because when it does, the damage is done. And what it does specifically, it crosses your blood-brain barrier, so it affects your nervous system. It impacts cognition. It drops IQ, increased likelihood of dropping IQ. So imagine what we've done to an entire population. We've just shifted their IQ levels down. We've lost our amazing high achievers, and we've increased the number of kids who will need remedial services.
There's no anecdote, is there?
There's no treatment. There's absolutely no treatment, and that's why when you detect lead in your in a child, and we routinely screen for lead, it alerts you to a public health emergency. Something is wrong in the environment, the home or the water or something that needs to be investigated. It affects behavior, so ADHD-like symptoms. Lead has been directly linked to violent offenses. So they've done actually bone biopsies of incarcerated individuals, and they've had previous lead exposure. And that is the last thing the city of Flint needs, is more people with violent offenses. But right now, kids with lead poisoning are asymptomatic. They have no symptoms. So we will see these symptoms in 5 years, in 10 years, in 15 years, unless we do some secondary prevention efforts now.
Do we have any idea? Do you have any idea how large the affected population is? How many children have been affected?
Right. So we are assuming the entire population who drank this drinking water, who cooked with this drinking water, has been affected. The screening that we do for lead picks up household lead exposure, like paint and soil. It does not pick up lead in drinking water. Lead in drinking water affects an entirely different and even more vulnerable population. It affects unborn children. It passes in utero. And it affects infants. And we do not screen for lead at those ages. And the half-life of lead in your blood is only about 1 month. So it only kind of lasts in your blood for that short period, and then it goes down. So, but the damage is already done. So we are assuming the entire population has been affected and thus needs more measures.
Is there an age after which it's not a major problem?
I'm obviously biased as a pediatrician. It's the most vulnerable populations are your babies, your small children, less than the age of 5 or 6. But lead affects all ages. For older people, it can cause gout and kidney problems. But the neurologic impact and the lifelong impact when it affects children is the most damning. Mm.
Senator Ananick, I want you, if possible, to speak not as a partisan Democrat, but as a state official. Based on what we've heard tonight and what you know, to what extent is the state culpable? To what extent is the state responsible? And is the state taking proper action to redress these grievances and make amends?
Thank you, Jack. First, I'll speak as a state official, but also as a Flint resident. I think, without question, they're in large part responsible and culpable. And they've taken some steps, but there's many more that need to be taken. And I think a number of folks believe that now that the switch is done to Detroit, that everything is okay now. And from a number of perspectives, that's just not true. So the water is still not safe to drink. People should still be filtering it. I think that's important to note. And that could be like that for many, many years, or at least definitely many months, for sure. And and the effects of what happened to the people of the city of Flint will be going on for years, if not longer. There was a study that came out of Wayne State University that says it's multi-generational, that a person that's affected with lead poisoning, their kids and their grandkids will be affected. The pipes that now have been ruined through the corrosion that was not treated appropriately are still there. Even if corrosion control gets in place and it's provides some barrier, it's still a big problem. The EPA came out with a report suggesting if the pipes are shifted, that more lead can leach into the water. So I think a lot of folks think, okay, you know, we've done our part. We gave some money to connect back over to Detroit, and now we're done. And truthfully, the real solution is just starting. I mean, we're just at the beginning of a long, long period of a remediation that needs to happen. So there's no question that the city and the state have a lot in front of them that they need to handle.
Quick follow-up. The mayor of Flint has been calling for Flint to be designated a federal disaster area. The governor has to request that, correct?
I think they would. I believe that's the case. And I think there are a number of things that need to happen, and that is one consideration that needs to be looked at. But we also need to take some really serious steps to take care of. There's a number of things, and the doctors next to me are much more experts than I am, but that can be done to help mitigate some of the problems. The damage is done, but to mitigate these problems and whatever steps we can take to help get those issues resolved, whatever resources we can bring to the table, I think we need to explore.
Have you asked the governor to declare Flint a disaster area?
You know, initially we asked him to call a health emergency,
right,
health advisory, and that would have, I think, been the first step. I want to make sure every resource that we can get, whether it's federal, state, a local, you know, nonprofit, anything we can get in our community to make sure that the citizens and these young, especially our youngest, most vulnerable, have a chance For the future, I think is something we have to do, and I'll keep pushing for that.
I now want to take the unorthodox step of asking a question of a member of the audience. Mr. Guyette, where'd you go, Kurt? Kurt, you've looked at this data. You've looked at the state test data. Is he here? All right. Well, in that case, I'm going to turn this question to any member of the panel, other than it may not be fair to put Steve on the spot. Those of you, and it certainly is true of both Dr. Edwards and Dr. Hannah Tisha, I'm sure, looking at the data from both what the state tests and the later tests, is it your opinion that the state deliberately misled people?
Well, they deliberately misled. I'd have to say that beyond the point where the memo came out, the memo demands an answer. This is an EPA employee, the foremost expert on the lead and copper rule in the United States, wrote this memo. It demands an answer, not tomorrow, not a week from now, not 3 months from now, but today. And when that memo was covered up, it had to be deliberate.
Well, before we turn to the audience, is there anything that any member of the panel wants to say? Is there anything that these folks should know that I've neglected to ask you?
Well, not for me, but for Dr. Edwards, you've been studying the water since the switchover. What is the quality of the water now? Is it substantially better? Or, as Senator Ananick said, you know, are we looking at months or years of the need to continue to have the water filtered?
Well, as in the case of the kids, the damage to the pipes that was done is irreversible. But the lead problem will gradually get better with time. So we were sampling in some homes today, and we sampled also 10 days ago. And these are what we call sentinel homes in Flint. Homes where we found very high lead, and what we're doing is tracking the lead levels in those homes as a function of time. And in general, the lead levels have dropped down quite dramatically. But as recently as 10 days ago, we sampled from one home in Flint and found 400 parts per billion lead still in a sample. So the water is definitely, as Dr. Mona just said, still not safe to drink. It will probably take weeks to a month or so until we're safely under what I consider the federal standards for safety. Those are somewhat out of date, so how much beyond federal standards you'd want to go before you considered the water safe, you know, that's another question. But
would you use the water if you lived in Flint and if you had children?
No, absolutely not. Not yet. Keep using your filters. Yeah. Keep following the advice. Do not use the water for cooking or drinking. And as soon as we think it's at least under the current federal safety standards, we will let you know. Would that help?
How will they find out?
We'll post it on our website.
What website?
Flintwaterstudy.org.
Okay.
And I'm sure MDEQ will probably endorse our statement that it's safe when we finally weigh in on that. But.
Right, well, right. I have a final question for the senator. It seems to me very likely. Flint is not the only city in mid-Michigan, in the state of Michigan, that has old pipes. And it seems to me that if this could happen here, it could happen elsewhere. Do you think the state of Michigan needs a massive program of infrastructure rebuilding to deal with this?
I do. And I also think that Michigan needs to take we basically did the lowest common denominator, maybe that's not the right term, but the lowest threshold when it comes to lead and copper rule. I think Michigan should lead the country in having the highest standard, first off, to make sure that we're always, the precautionary principle is I'd rather have people know that there's a potential problem and not be one than what happened in Flint where folks were told there was no problem and found out that their children and their loved ones were poisoned. So I think, one, that's the first important thing. We should be leading the country and having the highest standards, having the best-tested water in the country, all over the state. And then also, we need to do a much better. I mean, it's been 17 years since we passed a roads plan, and, you know, we can't wait 17 years to pass another infrastructure plan that addresses sewer and water pipes, because I think this needs to be done relatively quickly. I think we need to come together in a bipartisan way and find a solution, because this is something that can happen anywhere, but it didn't have to happen to Flint. That's one of the most important things.
Right. Well, we know that. But yeah. Do we have any idea what it would cost to replace the pipes in Flint that need to be replaced?
I do believe that they have an estimate. I don't remember exactly what that is.
Dr. Edwards? On the city's information, it's $1.5 billion.
But we had lead pipes before, and we didn't have an increase in kids with lead poisoning. So
right.
The problem was the lack of corrosion inhibitor and the corrosive water.
That's right. But it's not inconceivable that something like this, nobody saw that coming, that something like this could happen elsewhere.
They should have saw this coming.
But they should have tested the water.
They should have added the corrosion inhibitor.
Right. Well, with that, I'd like to turn to the audience. If you'd like to ask a question, please raise your hand and wait till I call on you and Brittany, our infrastructure expert, with this gentleman in the back with the beard. And please say your name. You know who we are. I'd like to know who you are and what you do, if possible.
My name's Jim Phillips. No longer a Flint resident, but I do enjoy businesses that serve water in the Flint area. Oh, okay. But anyway, I want to know if, I think his name's Howard Croft. He was head of the Flint Water Department, and he was recently fired. I want to know if he was made a scapegoat or if that was actually, you know, if he was as responsible as they're making it seem that he was.
Anybody up here want to take a crack at that?
Anybody can answer that.
You know, I can say from my observations that the city of Flint certainly made their share of mistakes. But at the same time, the main cause of this problem was the initial decision not to install corrosion control. And I've worked with some of the biggest, best-funded water companies around the country who had a corrosion problem of this magnitude, and it literally brought them to their knees. And the city of Flint has been working overtime to replace water main breaks, to respond to customer complaints, to respond to lead issues, and the city of Flint is not one of the best funded and best manned utilities in the country. And so I might be somewhat biased, and I admit that they did make some mistakes, but overall, the city of Flint employees did a lot of good things during this crisis, including, you know, Mike Glasgow, for instance, initially testing for lead in Leanne Walter's house. And so while they're not blameless, I don't think any substantial portion of the blame can fall on the city of Flint.
But who made the decision not to impose corrosion control? Senator, do you know?
I don't know. I'm not sure if they had a meeting and decided who didn't do it.
Right.
But, you know, the city was under emergency manager at the time.
Right.
And I can tell you there's been a lot of creative history since then. But, you know, I'm making a little bit of light of it. But
right.
During the time of emergency manager, if the city council or the mayor wanted to turn the light switch on, they had to run it up. They had to run up the flagpole to say that the local officials decided not to use corrosion.
So the emergency manager was ultimately responsible for any decision made.
Yes.
And the emergency manager is an appointee of the governor.
That's right.
Now, however, I remember I did not observe this thing with the intensity that Steve did, but I remember early on, General Motors switched their water because it was corrosive. Did that set off any alarm bells in your head?
October 2014.
October.
Not good for cars, but okay for kids' brains.
Yeah. I mean, didn't somebody think, huh? Did that occur to you?
There's no question about it. I mean, there was folks working on this, myself
right.
included. Initially, I started working on this issue as it related to cost. If you're a city of Flint resident, everyone will tell you that we have some of the highest, if not the highest, water bills across the state,
right.
for sure. And that was an issue that we were first working on. And then there was issues with E. coli, and then TTHM, and then we became aware of the lead issue. So there was a number of people working on it, but when the folks who are supposed to be experts are telling you, oh, the water's fine, we have to make this change here. I won't make this mistake again. I promise you that. But when an expert tells you, who's supposed to know better, that the water's safe to drink, I drank it for a long period of time. myself. And there's no question when General Motors says it's going to corrode their engine blocks,
right?
That probably should have sent off a bigger. I mean, a lot of folks were really concerned by it, but they kept saying, "Well, it's fine," and it clearly wasn't.
This gentleman right here in the dark suit,
African
American gentleman.
Question in the back here.
Okay, we'll do that first.
Mary Parks, retired. It's a practical question. Can we use Flint water in humidifiers and not suffer any ill effects?
Great question.
Yes, so the metals are not transmitted through the air. So, yes, you can use your humidifiers and you should be just fine.
Which also goes to bathing. A lot of people have asked about bathing, and that's also fine.
Okay, this gentleman here.
Hi, my name is Arthur Woodson. All of them I fought, the city, MDEQ, and EPA, Jennifer Crooks, and Susan Hedman, because Mike Mikhail Totoro sent her the memo, and she sent back to MDEQ telling them on how to squash all the naysayers and people that was involved in protesting and everything. Then you have to look at from when they first started having the TTHM levels that was high, and they wouldn't tell anyone. And I called EPA, and EPA made them come out in November with the notice advisory saying that the TTHMs was up, and they were still 30 days beyond violation on that. Now, my question is, where they hid the lead levels.
I'm sorry, say that again.
They hid the lead levels.
Right.
Where they didn't test in the right spots and the worst case scenarios and all that. Where they hid the TTHMs and didn't test correct for that. And TTHMs to me seems a whole lot worse because it affects everybody, every age. And it's even worse when it's vaporized when you're taking showers because it has direct contact to the blood and the lungs.
Could one of our scientists speak to TTHMs?
My question is, and I wrap it up. My question is, and Darnell Early made Dane Walling over a day-to-day basis,
right.
June the 12th, 2014, right after he switched over to Detroit Water. My two questions is, why isn't ATSDR in here, and why we haven't petitioned them, Mr. Ananay?
Well, let's start one question at a time. First of all, we need to, for those of us who are laymen, talk about TTHMs.
So TTHMs have their own regulation, and it's true that I don't think you were informed as rapidly as you should have been. But in general, I wouldn't be as concerned about THMs as I would about lead in water. And, people are given public health advice on that, and the city did take steps. They installed the GAC. We came out in the summer and confirmed that the THMs were lower in the water. So there were no real laws that were, broken. There were monitoring violations. But the corrosion control issue really was just blatantly breaking the law. I mean, every city shall have a corrosion control program, and Flint had none. And lead is much better documented as dangerous to the health of everyone, especially young children and developing fetus.
Dr. Hanna-Tisha, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I agree. So TTHMs, total trihalomethanes, are disinfectant byproducts. So it's a byproduct of the chlorine that's added to the water system. You have to have kind of more of a chronic long-term exposure. Sure. And the evidence on lead is humongous, and it's so damning.
But just briefly, I want to take one question. What was your first question beyond that?
The first question was, I worked with a veteran that drunk TTHMs in
right.
Camp Lejeune, and they had to bring in ATSDR to register Flint as a contaminated area, basically.
Right.
Has anyone from Genesee County Health Department or from the state or anyone called in, which is part of CDC, have anybody called them in? Because, like you said, it can be 5 to 10 years down the road.
Right. If we get through the acronyms, has anyone involved the federal Centers for Disease Control in this?
But I know the state is in communication with them. The MDHHS, another acronym, the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, is in contact with both the CDC and the ATSDR about this issue. But I don't know what they've been talking about.
Gotcha. Next question. How about the gentleman right there next to the one who just asked a question? Then we're going to go to the bar.
Paul Rozicki, I live in Flint, professor at Mott College. Two related questions. First of all,
Let's just ask one question each.
Okay. Well, yeah. Is there any realistic way to fix the water thing without replacing all the pipes? And the related one was, is there any way to find $1.5 billion to replace the pipes?
Well. First of all, all right, we'll take these two this once. But first of all, anyone want to speak to the question of remediation? Will the filters do it?
So the filters are virtually 100% effective as long as you use them correctly and for water for cooking and drinking. In terms of a short-term fix, it's to install corrosion control. And some of the foremost experts in the world on lead corrosion from the EPA are currently advising MDEQ and the city of Flint. So as long as their input is being followed, I'm sure Flint will have a corrosion control program soon that is second to none. And the pipe replacement issue, I thought first when I heard the estimate, it was to replace all the pipes and upgrade Flint's system. That's $1.5 billion. I think the estimate to replace the lead pipes alone is on the order of $15 to $20 million. So that's a longer-term possible solution, but it's not going to solve this problem. You still need corrosion control because there's lead materials in your home, and that's why we have a corrosion control
law. You said 50 or 20 million or billion?
No, it's 15 million for
the lead pipes are.
But you have to figure out how many lead pipes are out there now, right. And no one knows.
So 44,000 index cards are where the lead pipes are.
Yeah. You're talking about the transmission lines to
right.
To the
there
homes.
Was a study
not the lead
done
in the homes.
How much it cost to upgrade Flint's entire distribution system. $1.5 billion.
Senator Ananick, is there any political will in Lansing to find this money?
Not right now, but I think, when we first started, there wasn't political will to find the money to switch over to Detroit. So,
right.
You know, there needs to continue to be, you know, this the public who, you know, in large part brought this issue to everyone needs to continue, you know, to continue to fight for this, and I'm going to continue to fight with them, as are my colleagues here on the stage. But one thing that Dr. Ebers just mentioned about the $15, $20 million for the service line replacement, which is where we know the biggest issue is, where the majority of upgrades to water plants come from is from what they call the Drinking Water Revolving Loan Fund. federal statute allows for service lines to be replaced. Michigan statute does not allow for that. So we're in the process of working on some legislation to allow for cities like Flint to apply for loans at a very low interest rate. I'd like them to be forgivable because of the situation that obviously happened in Flint, and because it wasn't our fault, that we could apply for loans to replace those service lines over a period of time. You can't replace them all in 1 year, obviously, but you could have a replacement plan in place that does replace them over a relatively short period of time and that provides a decent amount of more safety and more security for the residents. And I think that's something that we're going to be working on, and I'm going to be pushing for the political war for that.
I'm going to ask you a difficult question. Flint is, and I want an honest answer, Flint is poor and of color and votes heavily Democratic, which the legislature is overwhelmingly Republican. Would there be more political will if this had happened in Holland and Ottawa County? Honestly.
Well, I think without question. And I think in the first place, places like that would never have allowed for corrosion control not to be put in place.
Right.
I firmly believe that we were used as a, you know, sort of a laboratory test case. We were the first, Flint was the first big city to be under the emergency manager, under the new law. They did it before they went into Detroit. And I think a lot of issues, they wanted to test it out how it would work in Flint. I'm not suggesting that they try to test out not using corrosion control, but they did test out not putting competent people right. In important positions.
And yet, this never would have happened. And yet, I believe both Dr. Edwards and Dr. Hannah Atisha, this was already known. there was no doubt you needed to put in corrosion control. This wasn't a surprise, correct?
It's the law. It's the federal law.
It's a federal law, and yet they didn't do it.
Yep.
Why? Anybody know why?
Well, if you read the emails, it's quite shocking that at about 4 or 5 points, MDEQ employees said, what's the point of putting it in because we're going to be switching to the new water in about a year. And
that's like saying you shouldn't wear your seatbelt because you're going to buy a new car next year.
It's really crazy, yeah. But that they wasn't mentioned just once. There were about four different times where this was mentioned. What's the point? We're just changing the water in a year. It's a chronic contaminant, which is false, by the way. They thought lead's a chronic contaminant. But the thought of leaving Flint's children drinking that water for a year did not bother people at MDEQ.
And you're right. It would never have happened in Ann Arbor or Grosse Pointe or Bloomfield Hills. And it happened in Flint, where we have every disparity in the world already. And we just gave them preventable lead poisoning.
And Jack, too, you mentioned earlier, but the exact quote from the DEQ spokesman was, just relax when it comes to lead poisoning. I think it's important for the public to know. Sure. That's the way they thought about it.
I'm not an attorney, and I believe, sir, you're not an attorney either, are you? But I believe, is it possible for the state, for a citizen to sue the state? And my understanding is that it is not.
I believe there is an avenue if gross negligence is there. And as we're meeting here, there is a group over at University of Michigan Flint who are meeting with attorneys who are in the process of pursuing a class action lawsuit on this very topic.
Thank you. Next question. How about this lady right here?
Thank you so much. My name's Mary McCaffrey. I work with Flint Public Schools, and I can tell you right now there are kids drinking this water as we speak. A lot of them think that if you boil it, it's okay. A lot more think that if they're not vomiting and getting a fever, that it's okay. Many, many more do not have the option of getting in the car and filling up their trunk with bottled water and driving home. To me, I don't know why there aren't vans from the state distributing water to each and every home. For 15 years, I've seen kids with every strike against them, and now their water is poisoned. We live in a third world country.
It's criminal. In 2015.
Yes.
So what you're telling us, just to make it perfectly clear, kids are still being poisoned.
People believe that when that water switched back on October 16th that everything was okay. And we need massive public education that, number one, the water is not safe yet. The water is not safe. Use a filter. We have very hard-to-reach pockets of people in our city who cannot get filters, who don't have access to clean water and bottled water. So their public education is not there. We are still in a public health emergency state.
Now, some of us, Elizabeth would tell you that I have great difficulty with the technology of taking a lid off a jar.
Yeah.
Are these filters easy for everybody? Do people automatically understand how to install them?
No, they're technically complicated, and they don't last long. It depends on how much water you use. The ones in the community, there's two predominant ones in the community, Brita ones and Pure ones, and they do have a light that changes color when they do need to replace. But they're technically difficult. There should have been a declared federal disaster emergency, and the National Guard should have gone door-to-door and given out filters and water.
Next question. This gentleman right at the bar. We haven't gone to the bar yet.
You're on the far right from our perspective, Jack.
Thank you.
There were two questions that were asked.
Please tell the governor.
There were two questions that the Free Press talked about in an editorial a week ago that Andy Dillon was in the middle of.
The former treasurer.
Former treasurer. The first question involved the switch to the Flint River, and the second question involved the failure not to put in the corrosive material. Does the state have their fingerprints all over that second question the same way they do the first question?
Well, I think we talked about that. I think it's pretty – does anybody dispute that? Okay.
When the one who makes the final decision is the one who bears the responsibility.
Well, I think we sort of established that. Next question. This gentleman right behind you.
So, Dr. Mona, so now that you've scared me completely about your speech earlier, how much does one need to ingest of that water to have a serious problem? And does this affect adults as much as children?
So don't be scared. You can do a lot to protect your children and yourself now. So we spoke a lot of doom and gloom, but the badness is based on large scale epidemiologic studies. So it doesn't mean every kid is going to have these problems and every adult's going to be with problems with the criminal justice system. It just increases the likelihood. But you can do things now. So you can continue to drink clean water by using filters and flushing and all these different things. Nutrition plays a vital role in the secondary prevention of lead exposure. So diets high in iron, calcium, vitamin C help clear lead from your body and decrease the absorption of lead. Putting kids in wraparound services like home visiting programs and early intervention and schools, all these things protect kids now so you will not see those effects later. And that's kind of what we're working as a community to build those secondary prevention efforts in, because we failed at primary prevention. So we're doing these things so we don't see those effects. We can't sit back and see these impacts in 20 years. We don't want our Flint kids to be the statistics of the consequences of lead poisonings. We can do something now. So it's not all doom and gloom. Go to your doctor. There's recommendations that you can do. Not everybody is going to have these problems. And our community has been traumatized, and they need hope. They need to believe that not every kid is going to have these problems, and they're not. But we need to take actions now. We need to get those federal and state resources so that our kids are buffered, mitigated from this exposure. So, and like I said earlier, it's the kids that we worry about more than the adults.
But in case you wondered, raising your child entirely on beer is not an answer. Young lady right back here with her hand up right there.
Let me just add, as bad as this problem is, it could have been a lot worse, because if people hadn't been involved, you would still be drinking Flint water today and for the next year. And
I believe we're talking about you, Dr. Edwards.
Well, and the extent of the problem depends on the duration of the exposure, and hopefully the duration of the exposure for many children was short. And as I said, I followed up with many victims of lead poisoning from water over the years, and just 2 months ago I spoke with a mother whose child was blood lead was so high it had to be hospitalized, sort of a near-death experience. And this was a 25-year follow-up, and that young woman just graduated with a PhD from Berkeley. So it is not the end of the world. What happened is bad. There's plenty to hope for. And just realize it could have been a lot worse. And if it wasn't for a lot of people in this room and outside of the room, it would have been a lot worse.
Now this young lady.
I live in Flint, and I live in one of the neighborhoods that's one of the older neighborhoods that has a high lead content. And one of the issues along with this, of course, is these incredible bills that we pay. And there also doesn't seem to be much relief from that. I know my bill has been, and I'm widowed, I live alone, and my bill is usually anywhere from $78 to $100 a month for poison. And I just don't see the reason for this. And, is there any hope that this is going to change as well? Because shutting people's water off because they cannot pay is another thing that I just think is criminal. And this whole situation really, truly has been criminal. And I really tend to wonder, is this something else that could be done,
Well, let's ask Senator Adenick about that. You're involved in the political process.
Yeah, I had been working on the cost issue for quite some time. We're getting to the point now where there's, I don't know the percentage, but a number of folks, I don't know, it's a higher percentage, and it gets higher every week, of people that are not paying or don't have water. And I was working on trying to find a way to get, like we do with electricity bills, where we can get people to have their bill sort of leveled off a little bit, they can get it reduced, and then get back to a payment plan Reducing the bills is something the city is going to have to determine. There's a lawsuit that's going on right now that is in the process of working its way through the system. There was the Georgia order that the bills be reduced. I didn't particularly see any reduction. I saw it 1 month, and then I didn't see it again after that. And that could have been because I use less, so I don't know exactly what happened there. But, you know, when you have poisonous water coming out of your faucet and you have the highest bills, I mean, you could understand why a lot of folks would think, well, why am I paying for water that I can't even use? And the amount of water used, I have to imagine, has been down because people aren't using it as much, and the bills aren't seeming to go down. So this is an issue that we need to keep the pressure on, because these issues have to be resolved.
Well, in sort of a wider sense, a lot of this is due to the fact that 35 years ago, General Motors had 79,000 auto jobs here, and now it's maybe 10,000. Flint needs jobs. Flint is a poor city. How does Flint revive?
I mean, that's a tough question. That may be its own issue in Hales. I don't know if there's enough beer out there for me to answer that question, but I mean, we have... I mean, that's what we have to. I mean, that. I mean,
but
we,
I know it's an unfair and unreasonable question, but that's what I ask. But still, isn't it about the fact that we ain't got no money, honey?
I mean, it's a big part of it. There's no question about it. I mean, we have to do. I mean, industrial cities all across this country have been, in a sense, abandoned by federal and state policies, and we have to do something because there's still hundreds of thousands, millions of people across the country live in these communities, and
yeah.
And we have to find ways to make sure that we can revive them again.
Steve, you've got more of the global view. You talk to people at every juncture of this. Is anybody concerned about what I asked? Just that.
Well, the people here.
Right.
They care. But once you get out of the community, people are not caring about Flint. And, we have to make that case.
Right.
That this was a city that helped build this state into what it is. And we have to make the investment now in order to make it again what it can be.
Right. What I wonder is why Michael Moore is not in this room with some cameras. Michael, come home. We need you. Where's Brittany, that lady right there in front of you with glasses and a red,
My name is Edna Bick. I'm a primary care physician, but I'm kind of retired. I mentor with children in the Flint schools at the school my children attended. And so I'd like two people up there that are real scientists to tell us more specifically how you're going to get the information to me. I still do a little doctoring. How you're going to get it to the schools as the major conduit to the parents, to the homeschool institutions, to the charter schools in our community, and to all those little focuses where kids are. Because there are less than 10,000 kids in the city school, and there are 25,000 kids supposedly living in the city. So either a lot of them are not in school or they're somewhere else. So please tell us what we can do and where I could go. And when I'm covering someone's office.
Your question is, how can people get information?
And how can all of us become the educator to our neighbor, to the mentee, and to the patients I might see, but your neighbor? How can we get that information to help spread the word?
An excellent question.
So you just got great information, and then you're going to go home and you're going to tell your neighbors and you're going to call your friends. So this is one venue of doing it. The state did send out a whole packet of information to every single kid in the Flint schools, every single kid who goes to any child care, licensed, unlicensed child care, every single kid in Head Start. So they all got a large packet of information that included lead and water precautions, included the nutrition guidelines, included when you need to go to the doctor. So it was a full packet. That packet is also available on the state's Flint Water website. So a lot of stuff was sent home, but that's not enough. So there needs to be communications on a daily basis from the public health department, from providers, from everybody. And I am with you. There is not enough of that communication happening so that people know that the water is not safe, that there's things they can do. Nutrition is important. Wraparound services, early education. There's a lot of things that we need to be communicating that aren't being effectively communicating right now. I agree.
Great. But, there are some people, believe it or not, who are not online.
True. And there's a lot of people who don't trust anything that the state puts out.
Can't imagine why. Are they communicating adequately with people who may not have full internet access?
No, and there is some efforts to do a community peer-to-peer education program, train-the-trainer model, to use. People trust their peers the most. They'll trust their neighborhood leaders, their block leaders, the pastors, and that is entirely recognized and understandable. So there are efforts to do some large-scale kind of train-the-trailer, community-based models of getting the information out to the right people. There's an AmeriCorps team of volunteers that might be coming in early next year to do some door-to-door education, filter education, etc., paired with community leaders.
This gentleman here in the red shirt, not an indication of his football status necessarily.
No, definitely not. My name is Jeff Rockefeller. My question is you keep talking about the dietary things that we can do to counteract this stuff. Where are these people that live in Flint
supposed
to get food and afford food on top of the water bills that are poisoning them?
There are no grocery stores in the city of Flint. I completely agree. But if you look at the evidence of what can help mitigate lead exposure, it is. So we are looking at short-term and long-term solutions. So we're partnering with SNAP Double Bucks program, which gets people double value on their food assistance. WIC is getting all people on WIC formula can now get ready-to-feed formula, which you don't have to mix with water. That's now eligible. Senator Stabenow helped us do that. So there's some short-term things, but there's long-term things. We need grocery stores. We need mobile grocery stores. We need all these different ways to access healthy nutrition. So it's just like, how do you revitalize Flint? There's short-term and long-term issues.
How can the people of Flint that can't afford to pay their water bill afford to buy nutritious food?
Yeah.
A very good question.
I agree.
Again, Senator Ananick, are there any attempts at programs, state, special aid?
Yeah, I'm continuing to push for this. I mean, we've outlined a number of these concerns to the governor and have been doing it for the last few months, laid out the ready-to-feed formula for the folks that are on food assistance and on EBT. the double-up food bucks does allow for folks that have food stamps to get double the amount if they use Michigan-grown produce and fruits and vegetables at farmers markets. I've been trying to figure out a way to get a delivery system in place. I've been working on that for longer than this since I've been in the legislature, because we just have, we have four small grocery stores in the city of Flint, and then mostly convenience stores after that that they don't really have access to healthy foods. And to the point you're making, if you can't afford your water bill, you can barely afford your electricity bill. You start off the week, and the end of the week, you have less money than when you started. People just can't afford healthy food. So, I'm trying to make this point to my colleagues and to the administration that this issue there's ways to help resolve it. It wasn't their fault that this is not something the citizens of Flint did. So there needs to be resources and needs to be help. And like the doctor said, Senator Stabenow helped us make the switch to ready to feed. But there's still a lot to do, and there's no question about it. And what worries me is whenever there's an issue like this, there's a period of time where people start to lose interest. Now, the citizens probably won't, but after people start to think they're safe, we have to continue that drumbeat that until this issue is resolved, however many, whether it's 1, 2, 5, 10, 15 years, until this issue is completely resolved, we need to keep pushing, because people are going to feel like, well, we've done our part. I mean, there's a number of my colleagues that feel that way. Okay,
which is partly the responsibility of we journalists. And I like to say, I hate defending any politician. It goes against my nature. But in defense of, in case you didn't know this, and most of you probably do, Senator Ananick is the leader of the Democrats in the state Senate, but there are only 11 Democrats out of 38. So he does not have a lot of ability, the Democrats don't, on their own, to get anything done. Well, anyway, how about the gentleman right in front of you? I don't think he's asked a question yet.
Thank you so much. My name is William Miller. I'm concerned on there's so many things to be concerned about with what's going on here. How come it comes down to motive for me with the state of, with the state when, with some of this stuff. How can they hide some of this stuff for 18 months, and then me and my community are supposed to trust them to do things for me coming down the pipe as things go forward? Professor Lessenberry hinted on it before. For me, I believe it is a pure political playbook that's been being played out. It just so happened that, oops, we poisoned hundreds, you know, thousands of people, so we got to track that back. But other than that, because I'm born and raised in Inkster, so my father here, I'm in Flint. I live in Inkster currently, and I got friends in Pontiac, Saginaw, Royal Oak Township. Although they are predominantly black, the other thing is that they are predominantly Democrat. And things are happening in these towns that are is deplorable. She asked about information. The state and the local government should be having all sorts of redundant disseminations of information for this stuff. This is not a game. People will get hurt from this. Families, friends, people we know, everyone is get hurt from this. And the silence on this is ridiculous. The inaction on that is ridiculous. Jobs. The reason why they won't give, they won't, we can make jobs with this overnight. Fixing the problem at hand will instantly make jobs for the situation. The problem is, there's a bunch of unionized folks who are going to get money from doing the work, and they don't want to do it on a federal level or a state level.
Is there a question, though? That
no, sir, there's open. Not. There was. Oh. And now I'm just angry.
That's right.
My question is, it came down to trust. They passed a $9.3 million Band-Aid to try and do this stuff. Are they actually going to do any work to try and help the people in the city I grew up?
Well, and that's a good point. I think, what if you didn't hear it, it was a $9.3 million Band-Aid. You know, when you have a broken leg, a Band-Aid doesn't fix your leg, right? So one of the first things that one of the things I have been advocating for in the beginning was sort of having somebody here, a designated emergency response person. I said, if there was a tornado in Oakland County, who would you send in? That's the person I want in Flint, disseminating information, providing people with all the resources they need, making sure they know how to put a filter in place. And basically, what we got was $9.3 million, which we should have gotten the entire amount. The City of Flint and the Mount Foundation shouldn't have to pay for this, but you know, we got what we could get. And then citizens, folks in our community have been going around trying to show people how to put filters on. You know, United Way is using their 2-in-1 system to help people answer questions. Dedicated folks like up here and other folks in the community are answering people's questions because the state has just done the bare minimum it needs to do, even though the vast majority of the problem was created by ineptitude and, you know, a number of other issues that could have been avoided. So it's, I've expressed that to them over, my colleagues over and over again. I said, I don't think you understand the level of the lack of trust, and I don't know if we're ever going to get it back. You know, I mean.
That's sort of a naive question. When I was a baby, long before you were born, Flint was devastated by a tornado. If that happened today, there'd be all sorts of aid that would pour in. This is worse. Why is there not?
I mean, there needs to be. I mean, I think we've talked about, you know, the many motives, and to be fair, and at the legislative level, because you do have to, when someone does something appropriate, you need to, you know, at least give them a little bit of pat on the back. We pushed for the money, and then the legislature had it, and within a week they passed unanimously. It's really a failure on the part of the administration, and I think it needs to be acknowledged because you know the governor, no matter who people voted for him, represents right. all 10 million right. people in the state of Michigan. And, you know, when his handpicked person, or persons, because there's more than one, failed to do what they were supposed to do, anyone with any common sense would say, well, if you caused the problem, you should fix it.
That person is an emissary of the governor. He's speaking for the governor.
And when they make a mistake, it's the right. state's responsibility to fix it. Mm-hmm. And right. they are not, in my opinion, fulfilling that obligation right. at all.
Right. This lady at the bar, brunette, she's had her hand up for some time, burgundy blouse.
Hi, my name is Karen Smith, and I'm from Lapeer County, and I beg to differ that people outside of Flint do not care about this problem. What affects one affects us all. We're all connected, and not only that, our water is connected. And I'm not even sure at this point if that's even being looked at. Now that we have high levels of chlorine and iron in our water, and God knows what else came out of those pipes, where is that going? That's going into our water supply and our aquifers.
Well, I think your question is, are people in Lapeer County getting the same water.
No,
as people
I am
in Flint.
Not. I'm just saying because that was the comment was made that people outside of Flint do not care, but I disagree with that. If you care about water at all, if you care about people at all,
this problem affects us all.
I think
what people were saying is not that people outside Flint didn't care about Flint. It was that people in Lansing, the decision makers, didn't care, as I heard it, didn't care adequately about Flint, in part because these are not the people who are voting for the people who are in power now. That's what I think I heard. I don't think anybody's saying that people outside of Genesee County don't necessarily care.
Okay, I stand corrected.
Whether you're trying to ask this question or not, you raised something interesting about water elsewhere in Michigan. Can anybody speak to the water in Lapeer County? We know they don't have water from the Flint River, but is she right? Do they also have problems with their water? Does anybody here know?
I mean, all the watersheds connected in some way, shape, or form. I don't know
Amen. From
a scientific
That's
standpoint.
That's my point right there. Amen. It's all connected, and we will all, at some point, have to deal with this because now we have contaminated water supplies. And that doesn't just go away overnight.
Well, to what extent is that accurate? We have a couple scientists here. Is this lady right?
To a very small extent. I think in a larger way, they're not connected because in the sewage treatment, for instance, the metals will be removed. And so Flint's lead won't get very far.
Okay. My other question, I guess, is why do you believe our governor is not declaring Flint a disaster area? My daughter in Charleston just went through the 1,000-year flood, and they declared that a federal disaster area. And within hours, maybe a day or two, FEMA was in there, and they were getting all kinds of federal help and monies pouring in there, which they deserve.
Well, that's a good question. The short answer is the governor has to request that designation. If we haven't answered that, Senator Endick, why has the governor not done so?
No, I don't. I mean, that's a good question. I don't know exactly. But I also think it's important, you know, there's a number of steps that need to be in place for a federal disaster, my understanding. And it may not necessarily bring the resources. It may not. It may or may not. I don't know. I don't want to say that it's the end-all, be-all answer. I think every resource we can get, whether it's federal, state, local, or you know, philanthropic, or from companies, we should be going after.
So are you saying there's some question about whether this qualifies as a disaster?
I don't represent the federal level. I don't know the answer to that question.
I'm just saying we don't know necessarily if it does.
It's a disaster without question, but it's not.
Right.
It was done by individuals as opposed to natural. So I don't know if we would necessarily qualify under a FEMA situation.
Dr. Edwards, have you looked at these issues? Are you familiar with what the tripwire is to have a federal disaster?
No, I don't, but I do know that certain agencies in the state government still don't think they did anything wrong.
That's daunting. Which agencies?
Guess.
What?
Guess.
DEQ?
Yeah.
Houston, we have a problem. How about there's a man all the way in the back there with a stylish cap like I wish I had in the light blue shirt.
It's a Michigan Tech cap. I was a substitute teacher starting in 1997. This is going to be a question directed to Dr. Mona, okay? Yeah, when I started, there were 33,000 in 79. There were 33,000 GM employees. Now there's about 7,000. There were 46 Flint community schools. Now there are 12. The lead problem, I don't think any of us were aware how serious that lead problem is. Even when we fix the lead problem with the water, Dr. Mona, we still have a lead problem in the environment, do we not? That needs to be addressed.
So the lead problem in the environment has been getting better in the last 30 years or so. So the lead is traditionally, pediatricians, we're used to lead in paint and soil and dust, and that's why we screen for lead in kids at the ages of 1 and 2 because that's when they're exposed to it. But that's been getting so much better. Every year the rates of lead poisoning goes down and down, both nationally and in the city of Flint. But the lead in water is new, and that increased, that doubled our percentage of kids with lead poisoning in the city of Flint. We've been going down every year, and then we shot back up, and Flint already had a pre-existing disparity. We already had more kids with lead poisoning because of the older age of our houses and because of poor nutrition that absorbs lead more. So we've already had a lead issue in Flint, like in most inner city, predominantly minority communities do, but the lead in water significantly increase that disparity. So we're going to see those problems in the schools, say in 5 years when we have more kids who need like early education and special ed services, and in 7-8 years when we have more kids who are in behavior problems. So we're not going to see those problems now. We'll see them later in the schools if we don't do these secondary prevention things. But lead in the house has been getting better because of lead abatement and getting rid of lead of paint and lead in soil and lead in gas.
But tonight we're just focusing on the water. This very short man next to Brittany here, behind Brittany.
Oh, me. All right. Thank you very much, you all. This is beautiful. I really love it. All I want to say is Michael Moore and us, it's 2015. Everybody can hit his webpage, his website, his Twitter, his Facebook. It is our turn to show him that he need to come back to Flint and do what he did. Second of all is that KWA gave 10,000 jobs to an outside source. That's economics. Did they not give
Tell
one job
Tell us what KWA, is that the Karagandhi Water
yes,
Authority?
Yes, sir. They gave 10,000 jobs to an outside source, but then they had nothing to Flint. So all I want to say is that the economics and everything is involved in what's going on now. What's going on with Karen Weaver and all of us? They disrespected her and not let her on the board so she could speak out on what was going on. So I enjoy the fact that you all are here. And like I said, Michael Moore and us, all right? That means that you had the opportunity in 2015 to speak your mind from your cell phone to him.
I really wish you'd tell us what you think. Steve Carmody, is that correct about the Water Authority giving all these jobs to outsiders?
When they started building the pipeline, they contracted with a company out of Alabama to build the pipes, and then they were creating a facility here in the Flint area to build the pipes. But initially, they had to build the pipes in their other facilities in other states. So, you know, a lot of that initial work was done outside of the state in other facilities with other employees. But now they are building pipes here. Now, the contractors who they've brought in to build the rest of the pipeline, I can't tell you where they're all from.
Right, right. Well, we should keep an eye on that. Why don't we come up to the front of this room here? We miss you. Who's got a question up here? This lady right here.
Charlene Farella. I'm a Flint resident. Could someone clarify more the definition of high-risk homes?
Good point. Good question.
So when it comes to the plumbing system, every home in Flint is high risk. When we planned our survey, one of the reasons I thought we'd capture this problem is because of that very fact. In many cities, if you don't sample the worst-case homes, you won't find a problem. But virtually every house in Flint was built before 1986, which was when lead was used in plumbing, either in lead solder or had lead pipe. And so even if you've had your water tested and the state told you it's safe, don't think your water's safe because the test program was flawed. So the advice that Dr. Mona and everyone's given to people about using a filter and protecting yourself applies to everyone. Every home in Flint is high risk. Now, there are higher-risk homes, and I wish we knew where those were, and the city is currently working through the problems on trying to find where the lead pipe is, and that might help, but they don't currently have that information.
Great. Next question. Okay, sir, Brittany.
My name is Mike Farella, and I have a question for you, Jim, Senator Jim. We live in the city of Flint. We have a filter on our kitchen sink, and we got a filter from the city of Flint. Less than 2 months, I had to replace that filter. Now, when you go to a Home Depot or Lowe's, you know what it costs to replace that filter? It's $18. Now, less than 2 months. Now, all these people in the city of Flint, many of them are poor. Who's paying for the replacement filters?
We if you call 211, which is United Way's sort of informational system, they can direct you to either the Department of Community Health, which has got the resource, the, I'm sorry, department, GCARD, apologize, has filter, and then I believe they have at least one for each, for replacement, if you are in need of a replacement. And then we've also, we provided some, we raised some money to get some private resources, United Way as well, so the state has provided some, and but I believe they're filtered through through GCARD. There are two different locations, but 211 can also answer that question for people. So, you know, I would like them to continue to provide filters, and we're going to keep raising money for that. But in the meantime, you can get a at least one refill, if not more than that.
Just call 211. The replacements are free.
We haven't taken very many questions from the left side of the room. There's a gentleman down there who's got his hand up. Stylishly white hair. I have just put my foot in it.
I think I'll let you pull your foot out of your mouth.
I blame it on lead in the water. Sorry. I blame it on my own inability to see you. I beg your pardon.
That's okay. My name is Deborah Baldwin. I'm a retired nurse. Now, the only things the city of Flint really provided were filters for homes. You have 12 schools minimum that should have high-quality filtration systems installed, so some of the poor residents that cannot have safe drinking water at least get safe drinking water at the school. So what's happening for that filtration
system? They do. The schools, Flint Community Schools, has the pure filters in place, so I'm pretty sure that they have the filters as well. Yeah, and the drinking fountains are shut off.
So how are the children then getting water throughout the day?
My understanding is that they've gotten bottled water donations and that the health department is working and gotten the pure filters installed in the school systems for their cooking and for the kids drinking.
Okay, I have two questions. The second question is everyone is looking at the children that are involved. You have to look at the elderly and the increase in dementia that may occur. You also have to look at somebody that's not being looked at. What's happening to the pets? That the pets have been given the water. Now you're going to have a higher incidence of pets that have neurological disorders and have the same symptoms as young children. You also have to look at the farm animals that are out that have been given Flint water, and what happens if they get the milk?
Stop a second. Does lead affect animals the same way it does people?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, that's the answer. And are people concerned about that? Is it transmitted through milk?
Breast milk?
No. Or cow's milk?
Cow's milk. Breastfeeding, and I would assume cow feeding is kind of protective. So unless your levels are super high, so it's actually a protective thing to nurse an animal or an animal, but I'm not an expert on animals. But yes, animals can be affected, and I would recommend going to your vet and not feeding your animals water as well.
I guess there's not a whole lot of cows drinking Flint River water. It's not a primary egg, but that is a very good question. I'm glad you raised it. Yeah. The person, I'm not going to do that again. The person next to Brittany here.
I own a home in Flint where my daughter lives, and also I'm a volunteer in the Flint schools. The other day I was volunteering kindergarten classroom. The kids started screaming, and it was because somebody was drinking the water out of the water fountain. I don't want our children to be dependent on filters, dependent on bottled waters. They lied to us. They poisoned us. How can we? It's one thing to have a comfortable conversation in this room. I give credit to all the citizens' action groups out there, the ACLU, the Water We Fighting For group, Claire, I see you over there. Thank you. But what groups can we work with to leverage the potential to get something done now?
Senator?
I think you just have to keep doing, the work of the citizens is what got us where we're at now. And I think we just have to keep pushing and keep explaining to people that this is not done and that the state has a large responsibility and a large culpability to fix this. There's no question about it. I can tell you a number of us, this will tell you that the point I made earlier, a number of us sat around at a restaurant and tried to figure out how we were going to get pure drinking filters into the schools. Myself, I'm not an expert in this. This is why I've asked for experts to come in. We were trying to figure it out, five or six of us in a table at a restaurant, because the state has continued to not provide the sort of the urgency on this issue that it needs to. And I think we need to keep sending that message that this is not, these are citizens of Michigan. They're citizens of, just because they're citizens of Flint doesn't mean they're not citizens of Michigan. They have the same right to understand that when they drink water, that there's going to be some safety there, and that filtration systems in the schools, there's 12 schools that are the Flint public schools, and there's a number of charters and private schools, that the state has a responsibility to help make sure that that water that they're drinking every day, or should be drinking every day, is safe for them. And that's just not happening right now. So I don't, what specific groups to work with, I mean, the groups that have been working on it before need to continue to work on it and try to add as many people to it as possible. And if we can get folks from outside of Flint to continue to help that drumbeat and talk to their senators and representatives in the governor's office and explain to them how important this is, that, you know, an ounce of prevention now can have dramatic improvements on people's lives later. And we just have to keep pushing for that.
You know, I'm the one person at Michigan Radio who's allowed to make editorial comments, and we're going to make one tonight, which is that if all of you aren't deeply and bitterly angry, there's something wrong with you. And I just hope you don't lose that focus. We'll take one more question, and it's going to be that gentleman right next to Brittany there.
Okay. My name is Aaron Holm. I basically want to ask him, why did we go to the Flint River to begin with? I mean, if you think about it, the idea was to reduce cost, I'm sure, but obviously that didn't happen. But more importantly, we're building the pipeline anyway, so why not stay with the Detroit water temporarily and then make the switch instead of taking
the risk? I'm going to try to answer that and then turn it to someone else. I think you've answered your own question. They were desperate to save money. And it was going to be at least a year, more like a year and a half, before Kara Gandhi was ready. But is there anything I'm missing there?
Well, they wanted to, you know, make that transition from Detroit to the Kara Gandhi, but the folks with DWSD were a little bit hesitant to do a short-term extension of the current contract. So the city looked, you know, the people who made the decision looked around and said, well, why don't we just go to the Flint River? It's only going to be a year and a half, and that's why they made that decision. It was meant for, you know, they made the decision to save money, but obviously that didn't work out very well, since I think they've almost spent as much as they probably would have if they had just stayed somehow with DWSD.
This is a question I've never seen asked, and I want to turn to our scientist. Are we confident that the water provided by the Kara Gandhi Authority is going to be good?
No.
I don't think you're the scientist. I think they're right here. Dr. Edwards.
One would hope that lessons have been learned here. And although I'm a cynic, and I'm getting more cynical as I get older, EPA's, as I said, the world's best corrosion scientists are involved in this, and I hope that they will speak out in the event that Flint and the new water don't have the best corrosion control in the world. So I will have confidence, and I hope I'm not disappointed.
Dr. Mona?
I'm concerned because when we go to KWA, Flint's going to have to treat water again. And we don't have a good history of treating water. So I would sincerely hope that we do listen to these EPA experts.
Now, I'm hoping that our panel or some of them can stay around to answer some questions individually. But I'd like to ask you all to do something, which is that all of the people on my right have played a significant role in discovering what's wrong with getting the word out and saving people's lives and IQ. And I'd like to give all of you to give them a hand for what they've done and for being here tonight. Thank you. And I'd like to thank you all. This has been, I think, the best issue in SNL with the best audience and the most intense issue we've ever had. I'd like to thank you for coming and thank all of my fellow panelists. And I hope you stay around and I hope you keep focused. Thank you.